Vladimir Dutin. Welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Tuesday, July 28th, a big day on the global stage. President Trump meets with both Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. CBS News national security analyst Aaron McLean tells us what to expect. Plus, we're going to separate fact from fiction when it comes to testosterone with Dr. John LaPook and an editor from Men's Health. Turns out, it is not the measure of a man, and too much of it can be dangerous. Also, we have CBS News network exclusive with the great William Shatner and his daughter Melanie, both beat cancer at the same time. And we'll be joined in studio by a brave little girl bitten by a shark, but still not afraid. All that and more ahead. Now to a remarkable gathering of world leaders in Washington today. They're in town for the funeral of Senator Lindsey Graham, but some are also expected to meet with President Trump, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. For more on what to expect, we're joined by CBS News national security analyst Aaron McLean. He's also the host of the School of War podcast. Good morning. Good to see you.
Hey, good morning, Vlad.
So this is the first meeting of Netanyahu and President Trump since the war with Iran started. And we all remember that meeting in the Oval Office with President Zelensky. Talk to me about those dynamics.
I mean, it is a remarkable reversal of fortune for these two men. You have Benjamin Netanyahu at various points has really been one of President Trump's closest international partners, really in a point right now where he's got serious areas of disagreement with the president over the future of the Iran war, most prominently, but also sale of F-35s to Turkey and the Saudi nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Vladimir Zelensky, which we all remember that meeting you referred to, he's kind of gone from, if you'll forgive the expression, zero to hero in President Trump's eyes. President Trump's like winners. Ukraine has had a few good months in its war with Russia, and relations between Trump and Zelensky are noticeably warmer. So you have these two guys kind of intersecting right now in Trump's affections.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Let's circle back to the war with Iran. CBS News has found that high-level U.S. officials have concerns about munitions shortages in the U.S. military, something both the president and the Secretary of Defense have disputed. Given that the Secretary of Defense has been back to the Hill to ask for more money, how do you assess this?
Well, we seem to see this already having an effect. Reports suggest that the munitions issues have caused or at least contributed to this pause we see in operations against Iran right now. If you break down the shortages that we have, it seems to be concentrated in interceptors, defensive weapons. This is a very serious issue because, of course, this is what you fire to shoot down Iranian ballistic missiles, anyone's ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, incoming drones, things like that. And also in the high-end offensive systems, our cruise missiles, our ballistic missiles. We seem to have sufficient stocks of the dumb bombs, the cheaper munitions. So while you could imagine continuing to prosecute the war with Iran, these are all trade-offs. Everything you shoot in the Middle East can't then be shot in the Pacific, and there are real concerns about deterrence in the Pacific, given the burn of munitions in the Middle East.
All right, Aaron, while I have you here, let's talk about the president who will eulogize Senator Lindsey Graham later in Washington today. As you know, Graham played a pivotal role in the president's foreign policy agenda. With his loss, what does that mean for the president's foreign policy agenda going forward?
Well, you know, I really see the passing of Senator Graham in the context of also losing in recent years Senator McCain and Senator Lieberman. You'll recall that the three of them were referred to as the three amigos.
Three amigos.
They're all gone now. And together, they did stand for this combination of the muscular use of American power, but also committed to a certain kind of vision of internationalism.
A throwback to the Reagan era, almost.
In many ways, yes. And there are other voices that support that particular vision in Washington, but the three of them concentrated together were really leaders on that front. All three are gone now. There are other trends, to include trends that, you know, flirt with or go even further with isolationism. Those trends are on the ascendant. Graham's death doesn't do anything to stop that or slow that down.
Aaron McLean, always great to have you, my friend.
Thank you
very much.
Time to look at the stories that caught our eye. And with us this morning is Kelly O'Grady. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning to you, Nate. All right, we are going to begin with an update on Republican Senator Mitch McConnell. So the senator's office released a new photo. You can see it right there. McConnell is said to be out of the hospital, but not returning to work until medically cleared after suffering a fall and pneumonia. Now, McConnell said, quote, "I'm still working hard to try to get back to my full schedule of work in the Senate and in Kentucky, but some aren't satisfied." In a letter, Kentucky's Governor Andy Beshear wrote, "I am calling on you to directly and verbally address the people of Kentucky and provide proof of your capacity to serve or resign." Next up, a landmark announcement in the controversy over Johnson & Johnson baby powder. So the pharmaceutical giant announced a $5.5 billion deal to settle tens of thousands of lawsuits that allege its talcum powder products cause ovarian cancer. Despite the proposed settlement, Johnson & Johnson said in a statement, quote, "These claims lack scientific merit and were sustained only by unreliable expert opinions that could not survive rigorous judicial review." And stunning video of a plane making an emergency landing on a California beach.
Cherokee 4512 Romeo, mayday, mayday, mayday. We've lost our engine. We're just coming up over the shoreline. We'll be putting it down on the beach, just in front of the stacks.
You never want to hear mayday, mayday, mayday. You can see this small plane gliding toward the sand before touching down. Thankfully, no one was hurt. The FAA says it's looking into why the plane's engine failed. And finally, terrifying moments at another California beach, reminding us how powerful the ocean is. So you can see a 16-year-old lifeguard attempting to rescue a 10-year-old child caught in the violent surf. Powerful waves repeatedly overtook them both, dragging them under. Another man tries to help out, but all three are crushed by another wave. Other Good Samaritans tried to help, but the waves kept coming. Eventually, a second lifeguard arrived and all were saved. And it's just so nice to see people just jump in and help rather than watch and stand.
I wasn't familiar with that story, and I was just listening to how you were going to end that. Yeah, they are all safe.
All heroes.
But kudos to that 16-year-old lifeguard who's holding on to that 10-year-old.
Dear life.
For dear life, not letting go in the wake and in the face of those crushing waves. I mean, incredible footage.
I know,
parents are probably
amazing. Absolutely.
Kelly, thank you. All right, Kelly.
Thank you. Well, now to a stunning twist in the case of Brian Koberger, the man sentenced for the 2022 murders of four University of Idaho students. Last year, he pled guilty as part of a deal, and he was given four life sentences without the possibility of parole. But now he says he wants to take back his guilty plea and head to trial. Jerika Duncan has more. Jerika, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, believe it or not, in a phone interview, Brian Koberger told the New York Times that he is innocent and was misled into confessing to the killings. Well, now he's filed a petition to withdraw his guilty plea.
How do you plead, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
More than 1 year after admitting in court to murdering four University of Idaho students in their home, Brian Koberger has filed to take back his guilty plea.
Are you pleading guilty because you are guilty?
Yes.
In a statement to the New York Times Sunday, Koberger said, "Justice was not served. My actual innocence is my truth. And the plea, hinged on by false promises and blatant disinformation, must be withdrawn." In court documents obtained by the Times, Koberger cited ineffective legal counsel, saying his defense team failed to disclose or review exculpatory evidence. He also claimed his lawyers made promises about what life in prison would look like. Koberger was convicted of stabbing Madison Mogan, Zana Kernodle, Ethan Chapin, and Kaylee Gonzalez in their beds multiple times during the early morning hours of November 13, 2022.
Each victim was stabbed multiple times.
Among the evidence, law enforcement officials say Koberger's DNA was found on a knife sheath at the crime scene, and a car matching his own was caught on surveillance video circling the area. After his arrest, Koberger denied committing the murders for more than 2 years, but eventually took a plea deal that promised he would not face the death penalty.
There's no other way to describe it than a long shot.
CBS News legal analyst Caroline Polisi says Koberger may get an evidentiary hearing for his petition, but is unlikely to succeed in getting a trial.
The nature of guilty pleas are such that you don't get a second bite at the apple. You explicitly forego your rights to appeal. That's the whole point of entering into a plea agreement.
This man killed my daughter. I want him to have no influence in the world anymore.
Steve and Christy Gonzalez, the parents of Kaylee, told CBS Mornings this after Koberger pleaded guilty last year.
Do you guys feel he's been remorseful?
No, not at all.
He's shown zero remorse. Mm-hmm. Not one bit. He's like a robot, a killing robot.
Such a heartbreaking story. In a statement to CBS News Monday, the Gonzalez family said Koberger, quote, never cried foul, never claimed he was uninformed or pressured, and never suggested there were problems with the discovery materials, adding, we believe fully in the evidence. State prosecutors declined to comment because of pending litigation. Vlad?
All right, Jerika, thank you very much. Ariana Grande is going to court saying someone stole her unreleased music, photos, and videos. She wants to know who did it. In a new lawsuit, Grande claims that the unidentified hackers caused irreparable harm to her career. She's asking the court to force internet providers to identify them. Ariana Grande is fighting back against anonymous hackers. On Monday, the pop superstar's legal team filed a lawsuit in a California state court alleging hackers targeted her photographers
and producers, infiltrating their devices and stealing unreleased music, private photos, videos, audio recordings, and behind-the-scenes footage taken during her creative process that were, quote, not intended for public consumption, then sold the content on the dark web. As part of the suit, Grande is asking the court to uncover the identities of the alleged hackers to hold them accountable.
Ariana Grande is going to subpoena, meaning ask for information from internet service providers, essentially from any tech company who could have information about who she thinks have allegedly committed these wrongs against her.
The complaint alleges in 2023 alone, hackers stole and released 45 of her songs, including the unreleased song titled Fantasize.
I'll see you in jail. Literally.
In 2024, during an appearance on the Zach Sang show, Grande addressed the leak and shared that the song was written for a TV show and wasn't for her own project.
So Fantasize comes out, crazy, was stolen, comes out, thieves, pirates, crooks, illegal. What?
How are they stealing?
I'll pay you more to put it away, like to get it back.
I think this case could test the boundaries of, can you sue anonymous people saying, I think something bad happened to me. I don't know by who, but I'm going to subpoena internet service providers and try and get the information I need to actually name the defendants.
Yeah, you feel so vulnerable when things are stolen from you.
All right, coming up, we will separate testosterone fact from fiction with the help of our Dr. John LaPook and the editorial director of Men's Health. Plus, Star Trek's William Shatner beat cancer, and so did his daughter. In their very first network interview, they recall how they fought it together. Now for a CBS News Network exclusive. Legendary actor William Shatner and his daughter, Melanie Shatner-Gretsch, are opening up about their discovery that they were both battling stage 4 cancer at the very same time. We're happy to say that they are now both cancer-free. They told Jonathan Vigliotti, candidly, how they helped each other through it.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
For generations of fans, William Shatner has been the man who takes on the unknown as Captain Kirk in Star Trek.
Two to beam up, Scotty.
Fearlessly steering the Starship Enterprise into the final frontier.
Risk is our business.
Today, the 95-year-old actor is opening up about a very different journey. He and his daughter, Melanie Shatner-Gretsch, both fought stage 4 cancer together 3 years ago.
Bill, can you take me through that moment? Because you had this lump.
So I had a lump, and the doctor, the friendly doctor, said, oh, it's a salivary gland, just massage it there.
After a month, the lump started to grow, so Shatner asked a doctor friend to examine it.
And he put his hands here, and he said, you better get this out, like that. Mm. Loving, no panic, but so serious that you knew something was happening. Yeah. I went to a great oncologist who said, we got to take that out now.
Because it had spread to your brain and
it had
your
spread
lungs.
To my brain, there were little points of light in my brain and little points of light, I think, in my lung.
And this is stage 4 malignant melanoma.
Stage 4.
Nearly a year before Shatner was diagnosed, his daughter Melanie found a lump on her breast. She says her doctor initially didn't find anything concerning on her ultrasound, but Melanie knew something was wrong.
Something just said, you need to check again.
So initially, it was the coast is clear. You would have initially said, thank God, I'm going back to my life.
And I'd have died because it was a super aggressive kind of cancer, breast cancer, and it had already escaped the breast wall and had gone into my chest.
She underwent months of chemotherapy, 30 rounds of radiation, a double mastectomy, and a year of immunotherapy, leaning on her father for support. She recalls one night reaching out to him.
There was this moment, Melanie, you feared the worst, and you call your dad. What were you fearing?
I was just in one of those moments where you want your daddy, you know, like you're little, you're feeling very little, and you're feeling, this is really scary. And I called him, and I literally could hear the sheets rustling, and he said, I'm coming over. And I certainly didn't want him to disturb himself like that. I just needed his voice. He's a source of like calm to me. And but then he got out of bed and drove over here, gave me the bear hug. And he said to me, this is just a blip in your life. You're going to get past this.
Both are now cancer-free. The good news stirring up deep emotions for Shatner as a father.
I never felt any fear that you would die, Mel. I always felt that somehow we would survive.
Although. I do remember.
Yes.
I remember getting my first clear PET scan and was like right in the very early on. So I called you immediately, and it was the third time I heard you cry in my whole life.
Third time.
As a father, the instinct, the intuition is to protect. And so here was something I couldn't protect. Mm. And then I didn't need to protect. She was going to be all right.
As we sit here today, how are you both feeling?
Nope. Well, that's actually funny because I don't know about you, but any time I get an ache or a pain, I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, you do have those moments. Oh,
yeah, you mean you got a sore foot? Oh, the cancer's come back.
Yeah.
No, I don't do that.
That's the difference between us right there.
At the same time, my daughter Melanie had stage 4 breast cancer.
Now they're sharing their cancer journey on a new podcast, premiering Wednesday, focusing on medicine, science, and spirituality. It's called No Time But Now.
But now is the operative phrase. You've got to make your life count now. Can't do it next week. You may be hit by a car. Do it now. You got to show your love now. You got to take care of yourself now. The cancer, which has amplified our relationship and brought us to this podcast is a miracle in itself. Mm-hmm. I have a deeper appreciation of her as an adult now.
And Shatner said he chose not to disclose his diagnosis originally because he was afraid it would impact his ability to find work. Vlad, he does not need the money. It's just how much he loves what he does. Though the greatest love, he says it was very apparent during this conversation, is for his family, Vlad.
We need to protect William Shatner at all costs.
Yes.
Reality, and his daughter as well.
Does look story. Amazing, though.
Yes. Jonathan, thank you very much. If you feel like you can't stop hearing about testosterone everywhere you turn lately, it is not in your head. From T-maxing influencers on social media to testing in the military, testosterone is trending with a capital T, not a low T. See what I did there? Now, Men's Health is digging in with its feature, T-Nation. It includes a survey that reveals how American men feel about testosterone. 70% say their levels are important to them, and 49% feel that their testosterone levels are a measure of their masculinity. First, on CBS Mornings, Men's Health Editorial Director Richard Dorman joins us along with CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook. Welcome, fellas.
Always great to be here.
All right, Rich, let's start with you. You found in this survey that 40% of men say their testosterone levels are more important to them today than they were a year ago. What's behind this cultural shift in this big focus on testosterone?
So you've got this perfect storm of cultural, social, and scientific forces coming together for what's called TRT, or testosterone replacement therapy. You've got new science emerging that eases a lot of the fears that we had about the cardiovascular and prostate risks that associated with TRT. You've got actors and podcasters, even politicians talking about their testosterone protocols. You've got all this happening in an optimization culture where everything can be rendered in a number. And then you've got these telehealth companies flooding your social media feeds telling you that this is the silver bullet that's going to change everything for you. So when you put all of those together, you've got that number where 40% of men say that their testosterone levels are more important than they were a year ago.
So, John, you know, even 10 years ago, we were told eat well, mm-hmm. work out,
yep.
get some sleep, mm-hmm. and that is how you optimize your body as you age.
It still is.
So that's still the advice. Yeah. But explain the function of testosterone and what are the symptoms of someone who has low testosterone?
So the symptoms include decreased libido, decreased sexual activity, erectile dysfunction, just feeling tired all the time, decreased muscle mass. Well, the first few of those are very common in a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, right? I mean, it may not, we want to be simplistic and say, oh, just measure your testosterone. If it's low, give it and everything will be good.
Right.
But it's complicated, and why it's something that you need to really talk to your healthcare provider about.
If I don't have any of those things on that list, but I want to look like some of those dudes that we're teasing in the video, right? Would you say to me, Vlad, I can prescribe testosterone to you? I don't have anything that you put, you know,
what a shill. It's the perfect question.
What a shill.
It is, because the Endocrine Society and the American Urologic Association specifically say you do not just screen the general population for testosterone unless you have symptoms.
So that's your recommendation. Unless you have symptoms,
that is
you should not rush to go get tested.
Right. If you do have symptoms, talk to your healthcare provider. Maybe it's something in your lifestyle. Maybe you need to lose weight. Maybe there are other things going on. Maybe okay. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So, Rich, you are on TRT.
I am. I have been for about 6 years.
And what do you want people to understand about it?
So I think the most interesting thing that I have found is that in this conversation, we tend to get oversimplified. We get you know, turned into cartoons who just want big muscles. We photographed 22 men. We interviewed over 2,200 men in our survey, and we found a lot of the through line, which is that men feel exhausted. They feel like they're losing drive and motivation. They feel like they're gaining weight and losing muscle and struggling with libido and sleep. And so they don't want to become someone new. They don't want to become superheroes. They just want to feel like themselves again. Mm. So I think that has to be the starting point, that you don't want to, you know, T-max your way into big muscles. It's really about resetting the baseline so that you have enough energy and enough drive to do what you really want to do.
So, John, everybody talks about the upside, the energy, the muscle, the libido, but talk to me about the downsides. I did ask a doctor. You and I talked about this about a year ago, and I asked my doctor, and one of the things that she said was, if you do this, if I do this for you, you're going to have to be on it pretty much for the rest of your life, because if you get off of it, that could be a problem.
Well, there are things that can happen when you get off of it. I mean, for one thing, you can have infertility. Because what happens is you have a negative feedback, so your testicles shrink. It's your own production of testosterone go down. Mm-hmm. And once you get off of it, you may actually have infertility for a while until sort of your body builds itself up. So that's one thing. Obviously, you know, things like acne, but there are some serious side effects. You know, in the big Traverse study that looked at the cardiovascular safety, these were people at increased risk of heart disease, 45 and over. But I spoke to one of the authors of that study yesterday, and some of the bad things that happened, or the risks, were pulmonary embolus, so clot in the lung, atrial fibrillation, which was an abnormal heart rate, and also acute kidney failure. And the big surprise, which was published after that original study, was an increase in fractures.
Wow.
Now, if you're a soldier, for example, we'll talk about the recent DOD suggestion. You know, fractures is an increased risk of fractures is not something you want to have.
You're right about that. You know, I did want to talk about the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, but I want to talk about the idea of testosterone being linked directly to your masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's what we see online mostly, especially when it comes to the youth.
Sure.
My son's friends are all in their early 20s, and this is all they're talking about. And in my head, I said this just the other day. I said, you're too young to be thinking about this. So what do you guys think about what's going on social media?
I think you're right. I think they've got their whole lives to worry about this stuff. They shouldn't be worrying about it now. But look, if you look at the advertising that's coming out of these telehealth companies, you see these big muscle guys, you know, looking amazing and having the best time ever. Why wouldn't I want to look like that? You also go into some of the darker corners of the so-called manosphere. Low T is synonymous with stuff like soy boy or betas or other insults that men are hurling at each other for being less than a man. What I find fascinating about that statistic, where nearly half of men are tying testosterone to their sense of masculinity, is that a testosterone test only measures a hormone. It doesn't measure whether you're a good parent, whether you're a good partner, whether you're a good friend, whether you're, you know, a good citizen. All these things that we use at Men's Health, and that I think we'd all agree are the real measures of a man or measures of masculinity, that's just not showing up in a T test.
That's well said. We could talk about this all show long.
Yep.
Actually, come back and talk about it. That's what we're going to do. Richard Dorman and Dr. John Lepuk, thank you so much. The Men's Health Summer Issue is on the newsstands now, and Vlad will be on the cover soon. We'll be right back.
Me and Lenny.
Oh, I love this song. Time now for stories that are the talk of the table this morning. And Natalie, it's on you.
I'm going to lead you off here.
All right.
My talk of the table, this one caught my attention, is in the Washington Post yesterday. They say the death of the stick shift is almost here. Yes, there are two people in the world, those who like to shift and those who don't. They like to cruise. Well, the article says Americans have given up on the cars with manual transmissions in favor of electric vehicles and SUVs. Now, preliminary government data show less than 1% of new vehicles made for the U.S. market in 2025 had stick shifts. Now, if you go back way back in our day, Vlad, not you, Nate.
What?
In 1980.
He wants to be part of Gen X. But
yeah. In 1980, that number was close to 35%. So here's my question for the two of you, and I think I know where we stand with this one. Vlad, you learned how to drive on a stick.
I didn't learn how to drive on a stick, but when I moved to Europe, where most
everybody drove a stick,
so that's where I learned. But I can do both.
You can do both.
But it is
going up.
United States had already gotten rid of stick shifts. So when I saw your story today, I was really intrigued by that.
Yeah, in Europe, apparently the decline is less. There's still about 30% of cars that are manufactured with stick shift because they won't give up the stick.
But I remember my younger sister drove stick.
Yeah.
She learned how to drive on stick.
I know
what about
just
you,
talking
Nate?
About testosterone and masculinity.
Yes.
I grew up feeling like if you know how to drive a stick, it's kind of manly.
Yeah, you're a man. You're a man.
You're a man's man. Even though there's women that know how to drive a stick, I know that. But I remember learning how to drive on a stick shift because of a girl that I liked.
Oh,
the motivation.
Look what I put it
and
in third gear.
And I was struggling.
Exactly.
Let's just say we didn't date. So I'm an automatic guy. Glad, what do you got?
All right, my talk on the table is the ever-growing issue to tip or not to tip. But this one is a little bit, let me share with you.
Okay, what's up?
A man in Michigan posted this picture of a screen at a Popeye's kiosk asking if he wanted to add a tip as, quote, a small way to thank the folks behind your crispy, juicy meal. Now, the internet is torn on this subject. Some people call the request delusional and insulting. Mm-hmm. One person posted, if you do not get served at a table, no tip.
Mm.
But another said that there are still employees there preparing and packing your food. This tipping, like the fact that you go in and buy a coffee and you have to give a tip. I think a lot of people in this economy where people are struggling, it's a lot to ask. My sense is restaurants should pay people a living wage.
For sure.
Of the company that owns Popeyes, Restaurant Brands, that CEO Joshua Kobza, according to their 2025 proxy statement, made about $15 million last year.
Okay.
I'm not begrudging him that. I'm a capitalist, but I think that people should be paid a living wage and not have to rely on their
The hard part is when you go to the airport and you're grabbing a water and then you have to go up to the counter.
And there's not a soul in sight.
There's not a soul in sight, but then they're asking for a tip when they ring you up. Then I'm like, wait a minute. But if you're making me a latte with extra foam, you're getting a
tip.
And
the vibes are right and the people are nice. Exactly. Yeah, I'll throw a tip on there.
Absolutely. Even though you're asking for 20% on a $10 latte.
That's true.
Okay, Scrooge McFlair. All right, anyways.
Now we know who El Chico.
What do you got?
All right, so my talk of the table is just $10, bro.
It's just $10.
I'm just saying.
First of all,
put the $2
in,
bro.
I don't even spend $10 on a latte. Just a New York City coffee for me.
We got to move on, Vlad. We're going to talk during the commercial break. All right, so my talk of the table is some moviegoers getting a more immersive experience than they expected. So fans are flocking to IMAX theaters to see the full effect of Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. I've seen it twice, so I get it. But good luck finding tickets. So many people are just getting tickets where they can get them, opting for the 4DX version without really knowing what they are in for. Check this out.
This is good.
I thought that was AI when I first saw that. So in the 4DX theaters, your seat will shake. You get sprayed by water during the movie, and it runs for nearly 3 hours.
Oh,
somebody said, imagine just getting waterboarded when the boat snaps.
See the guy trying to eat his nachos?
Yo,
I think that would be really fun, though.
One lady put, hi, it's me. I like torture. Planning to see it in 4DX this weekend. Okay. If that's your king, do your thing. Hey, listen, I'm not going to lie. I've seen it twice. I might go with 4DX.
Oh my gosh, 4DX.
I'll let you know how it is.
Sprayed by the water.
Yeah, pretty.
I didn't see anything. I was just snorkeling. Then I went up to breathe. And then something hard bit me. And then it tried to take me away. Then I pick up my hand and it's all in blood.
Aw, as we continue our coverage of Shark Week, we're celebrating the resilience of Leah Lendell. 1 year ago, she survived a bull shark attack in South Florida. She endured a 6-hour surgery to reattach her right hand. And today, she is not only back in the ocean, but she wants all of us to conquer our fears. Leah Lendell, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you here.
Nice to have you too.
As I said, it's been a year. Can we see your hand? I mean, show us your hand. Tell us about the recovery and what you've been going through. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
And how has your recovery been?
So I play piano. I am scuba certified.
Okay. Wow. Is the piano good for you to be able to play, like help your muscles?
And,
It's
like therapy.
With the recovery, exactly. Now, I know in April, you went with your family back to the site of the attack as well. Why was that important to you?
Because, like, it's kind of healing for me to see me there. And I already went through the hardest.
Now, I'm really petrified of sharks. I am scared to death. And you faced a shark, and he did that to your hand, but yet you say you got to conquer your fears. You got to get back in the ocean, and you're doing that. You're not afraid at all?
I'm not. Because, like, sharks, what is the chance of you getting bit by a shark again?
That's true. There is that. She's got a sense of humor
about it. Makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. And so tell me, and I know you have a lot of siblings.
Yeah.
How did they feel when all of this happened?
So they felt terrified, and right now they're kind of terrified too.
They're still afraid of sharks, but you're telling everybody else to get back in the ocean. Yeah. Don't be afraid, because you love sharks.
Yeah,
you love sharks, and you also love the water, like we all do. So I actually wanted to bring somebody in that also loves the water. We have a surprise guest for you. Let's bring out your role model, Paralympic swimmer and shark attack survivor, Allie Truitt. Where's she at?
Where's Allie?
Allie here.
Thank you for coming.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, I'm so excited.
You are such a superstar. You're amazing.
Gosh.
And this
Allie,
is incredible.
Have a seat.
Yeah. Did you have any? You had no idea this was happening today.
So, I know.
Yeah, Allie, why did you want to be here?
I mean, so many reasons. Leah is so strong and such a fighter and so incredible in just the work that she's doing now and how she carries herself. And so when I got the call to come surprise her, I jumped at the opportunity. There is nowhere I'd rather be.
Leah, how are you feeling right now? What would you like to say to Allie?
She's your hero, right?
Yeah, what would you like to say to her?
That you are my hero and my, what is it called? You are making me be braver.
Oh, you're my hero and you're making all of us be braver too.
That's right.
It's amazing. That's
right. So wait, tell me about these shark teeth. Yeah.
So right here, I have only a tiniest part of my shark teeth.
Can we see that? Can you put a little in your hand? How many have you collected? You've collected these from the beach, right?
Yeah.
How many do you have in your collection?
About 1,900.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you collected them from the beach. I thought you snatched them out of the shark's mouth. Because you are tough. You are tough.
Allie, we, of course, know you from the Paralympics. You competed as well. And you're going to head back and try to do it again in 2028.
I am. I'm looking forward to it. I'm training 3 to 5 hours a day right now in preparation. So I'm going to throw everything I have at making Team USA and bringing home some medals.
Let me ask you, Allie, following that devastating shark attack and then the amputation of your left leg, you then went on to compete in the Paralympic Games just 1 year later, which is incredible. Yeah. What do you want Leah to take away from her experience, and how should she follow your example?
Well, you know, I think Leah is a superstar, and she's gonna look to other examples, and she's gonna be an example for other people too. And I think what you and your family are doing already with, you know, taking a bad thing that happened and trying to use it for good, the world needs more of that. So I think it's incredible you're doing that. I would say do more of that as much as you can. I'm trying to do it too. And the second thing I would tell you is something I think you already know with what you've already shown yourself and others at 9 and 10 years old, which is that you are so much stronger than you think. Mm. And I hope you never forget that for the rest of your life to come. We brought you a little stronger than you think t-shirt.
I love that.
And I have a little bracelet too. And I hope those are reminders for you of just how strong you are.
Oh my goodness, that is wonderful. And Stronger Than You Think is, by the way, a foundation that provides financial assistance for prosthetics. So such important work that you both are doing. So amazing. And so great to have you here as an inspiring person to all of us here. Thank you.
Leah, any final words you'd like to say to all the kids out there?
Do not be afraid of sharks, because, like, there's so many people and, like, One person out of a million is right. going to get bit
Don't
by
Don't be
shark.
Afraid.
There you go. Strong Amazing. Girl, Leah and Allie Truitt. Leah Lindell, thank you. Shark Week's on Discovery Channel all week.